Support for Science Friday comes from Northeastern University, where researchers are developing solutions to global challenges in health, security, and sustainability. Learn how Northeastern is making tomorrow happen at northeastern.edu/tomorrow.
We'll forgive you if you're behaving a little irrationally today. Do I seem a bit transcendental? You math geeks know what I'm talking about, I'm sure, because it's Pi Day. We're here to celebrate that number that's mesmerized mathematicians for millennia, a number that even today in the age of supercomputers, we still haven't been able to calculate it in its entirety. And spoiler alert, we probably never will. We've invited the Pi buff Stephen Strogatz to celebrate with us. He's the author of The Joy of X, a guided tour of math from 1 to infinity, professor of applied math at Cornell University in Ithaca. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. I'm delighted to be back.
What are you doing to celebrate today?
Well, there's a big pie-eating contest going on at the math department, which fortunately I'm missing.
We'll let you get back to it a little later. What is your favorite pie, if I might ask? You have a favorite?
Oh, I definitely have a favorite pie. I am a sucker for strawberry rhubarb pie.
Ooh, that's good. We have our own little pie going on here in Science Friday. We're into apple and of course, we throw some cheesecake in it because it's New York at the time. Let's start with, I got about a minute to the break. So why are people so interested in pi? What is it?
Well, I think that there's something almost mystical about it in a way that it, on the one hand, it symbolizes the most perfect order we know, a circle. You know, it's... Yeah. What could be more perfect than that shape? And yet, on the other hand, as you mentioned earlier, we will never know all of pi in terms of its digits. It seems in some ways it acts almost like a random sequence.
All right. We're going to come back and talk. Stay with us, Steve. We're going to talk more with Steve Strogatz. Number 844-724-8255. We're talking about pi. How many digits can you say it? This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the history of pi with Stephen Strogatz, author of The Joy of X, A Guided Tour of Math from 1 to Infinity. When we interrupted you, rudely, of course, you were talking about the circle being so perfect. And how far back in history were people looking to investigate pi?
We have evidence that people were looking as far back as about 4,000 years ago.
4,000? 4,000 years?
Yeah, 4,000, yeah. There's a Babylonian tablet, clay tablet, which has been dated about 1900 BC, and it shows that at that time the Babylonians had estimated pi to be 3 1/8, which would be 3.125, which isn't too far off from what we know it to be today.
And why were people so interested in it? What is there? Is there something mystical about it or what?
I think it was natural as soon as people started to think about shapes and quantifying shapes, which had all kinds of – there were reasons we cared about that. For one thing, tax collectors needed to figure out how much land – you know, if you're going to pay taxes to the king, that might depend how much the area of your land was. And if your land happened to have an irregular shape, if it wasn't just a rectangular plot – if it had a curved boundary, say, you might need to do a calculation of a shape whose, you know, that wasn't just a simple square or rectangle. Now, that doesn't explain why we would care about a perfect circle. Not many people had circular plots of land. But, you know, the astronomers had to make calendars to predict the horoscopes of the king, to worry about the calendar. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you start thinking about planets and their motion, it's pretty natural to start thinking about circles. The other thing, too, is that, you know, when you look someone in the eye, you're seeing a couple of circles right there. You see the iris, the colored part of their eye, and you see their pupil. So we see circles as soon as we look at each other.
Interesting. I thought about that. You're a historian, a mathematician. Let's talk about Archimedes. You always hear the story of the bathtub and the Eureka moment, but not much about pi, but he was very interested in it, wasn't he not?
He certainly was. Yeah, Archimedes should not just be thought of as another Greek name to be confused with Pythagoras or Euclid. I mean, those are great mathematicians too, but Archimedes is a giant, even among giants. If you were to rank, say, the top five mathematicians of all time, everyone, I think, would agree Archimedes is right up there. So what he did in connection to pi was the first principled calculation, that is, as opposed to just like putting a rope tied to a stick and making a circle and measuring pi empirically. He did a real mathematical calculation of pi that was the best the world had ever seen, which led him in the year of, well, we don't know exactly when, but about 250 BC, he showed that pi was between 3 and 1 seventh and 3 and 10 71sts. Now, you might wonder, how did he do that?
That was my next question.
That is naturally
a
good question.
That's a precision. How do you get to in those days?
Yeah, right, because to 1 seventh really is 10 70ths. So it's 10 70ths or 10 71sts. It's sandwiched in there somewhere, and he knew it was in there, but didn't know exactly what it was. Now, he approached that by drawing a shape inside a circle, a simple shape, like let's say we put a square inside a circle so that its four corners touch the circle. That's what a geometer would call the inscribed square. You can also make a square that's outside the circle that just touches it at four points, and that'd be the circumscribed square.
Right.
And you could do that with other shapes too. You could put a hexagon in there or an octagon.
Right.
And the more sides you put, the closer that polygon starts to look like a circle. So that was his approach. He put inside a six-sided figure and then made it 12-sided and 24, and he actually went all the way up to 96-sided polygon, and using this 96-gon and tremendous powers of calculation. I mean, keep in mind, this is not an era when the decimal system was known in Syracuse, where he was working in Sicily. He's using some clunky system of arithmetic, but he's good enough to get pi that accurate, as we just said.
Now, I remember seeing this as a kid, and we actually have this on our website. You can actually calculate pi using toothpicks, right?
Yes, amazingly. you can do it. And
How do you do that?
Well, this is an experiment that people can try at home if they want. I see that on your website you've made it nicely possible for people to print out a worksheet if they want to do that.
Right.
The essential ingredients are, as you say, a bunch of identical little sticks, which you might as well take to be toothpicks, maybe 2.5 inches long. And then you need a set of parallel lines. Now, and they should be evenly spaced. Like, for instance, if you have a hardwood floor in your house, there are long strips of wood, and there will be edges, you know, from where one piece of wood meets the other. Those could be the parallel lines. Or if you don't have a hardwood floor, you can get out a ruler and just draw some lines, make sure they're parallel on a big piece of paper, and space them 2.5 inches apart, the same as the length of the toothpick.
Okay.
Then you just start dropping the toothpicks haphazardly on your piece of paper or on your hardwood floor. And here's the idea, that sometimes a toothpick, by chance, will happen to land in a way that's crossing one of the lines on the floor, you know.
Right.
Or sometimes it'll just lie between two of the lines. Not touching any.
Yeah.
And if you throw down these toothpicks at random enough times, you'll see that more often than not, they touch a line. But the question is exactly how more often than not. That is, you want to measure the number of times the toothpick touches a line out of the total number of toothpicks you threw down. And then there's a formula, which I could try reading, or people can look at your website,
which
I just mentioned. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you just throw down the toothpicks. If they are the same length as the distance between the parallel lines, then you measure 2 times the number of toothpicks you threw down and divide that by the total number of toothpicks that crossed a line. And that will give you, to some approximation, pi.
As Steve says, it's on our website at sciencefriday.com. You can actually do a virtual throwdown. There's a little program up there that'll throw the toothpicks for you and show you. When you get to about 100 throws, it gets pretty accurate.
Yes, it does.
It's amazing. It's just absolutely spooky.
Well, if you throw them carefully randomly, if that doesn't sound too much of a contradiction. That is what I mean is, like, if you might think, I'm clever, I'm going to hold a big handful of toothpicks in my hand and then just throw them all at once. That's going to be biased because they're all lined up when you're holding them in your hand. You don't want to do that. You have to do something really quite erratic. And I don't know, like get yourself dizzy, throw a few, stagger a little bit, throw a few more. You know, you want to randomize it, which is what your computer simulator does so well.
Right. Who thinks this stuff up? I mean, mathematicians, are they, how do they come up thinking that this is how you can get pi? And I ask that very seriously. Do they sit around and think of these ideas over the millennia? You know, if I throw these toothpicks, I throw these sticks
well,
on a...
I can tell you the history of the toothpick problem. It's the more general question we can talk about too. But
let's talk about the general problem.
The general problem
and the specific, if you get to that. Yeah.
Let's do the general one first, because I think this might help dispel some misconceptions about what math is about. That is, that going through school, a lot of us think math is sort of colorless. It's about counting correctly and measuring properly, and it's sort of an eat your vegetables subject.
Right.
And that's not what mathematicians would say. Those of us who practice it for a living think of it as very playful and free, and it's, we follow our curiosity and we do whatever appeals to us for reasons of beauty or mystery. And so we think of all kinds of cockamamie stuff all the time just because we're curious. And in the case of this problem, well, there was a rich aristocrat named Georges Louis Leclerc in France in the 1700s, who later became Count Buffon. And Count Buffon was an ambitious guy, not just rich. He wanted to be in the academy, you know, to be recognized as a great scientist in France. So his best subject was math. He thought his best shot at getting in was to do something mathematical. And he was interested in a gambling game, which is a game where you throw coins on the floor. And imagine a tiled floor with square tiles. Does the coin land inside one of the squares, or is it touching one of the lines?
Right.
You can imagine playing a game like that, right? Making bets. Is it in the square or not?
Right.
So that game is actually much simpler to analyze than the thing we just described, that is the throwing needles or toothpicks onto a hardwood floor. The problem with the circles, that is like a franc or another round coin going into a square, that was too trivial for him to gain admission to the academy. Anybody could solve that. But this problem, so he made the problem harder to prove that he had the right stuff. And he turns out he did have the right stuff.
Well, let's go to the phones. Our number is 844-724-8255. Let's go out to Honolulu. Hi, Bob in Honolulu. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, this is Science Pie Day, right?
Science Pie Day. Absolutely. Are you having some pie today, Bob?
And I'm standing in line at the local pie store. Yes. My question is this. I've read a lot about the pyramids, especially the Great Pyramid of Giza, and also the ones at Teotihuacan. And I'm told that there is a pie relationship between the height of the Great Pyramid and the perimeter at the base, and that it's the height times 4 pi equals the perimeter at the base. And if that's true, how did they do that? I mean, that was thousands of years before Archimedes or Euclid or any of those guys.
Stephen, you got an answer for that?
Well, I have heard things like that. There are people who say that the pyramids obey relationships like that. And I'm not sure what to say. I mean, it could be a coincidence. On the other hand, it seems unlikely if it's very accurate. I'm not so convinced it is as accurate as all that, but let's suppose it is. The Egyptians were very, very good mathematicians and interested in astronomy too, like all ancient cultures. And so we know that the Egyptians, as early as 2,000 years ago, as you say, long before Archimedes, sorry, not 2,000 years ago, 2,000 years before Christ, I mean, 2,000 years BC, the Egyptians had... we know from a document called the Rhind Papyrus that they had an estimate of pi as 3.16 at that point. So that was very close. I mean, that's, you know, we think today it's 3, but not that we think. We know it's 3.1415, et cetera. So the Egyptians were very fine mathematicians. Now, how would they have done the engineering feat? I don't know. It's not something I would know how to tell you, but it wouldn't surprise me. They were tremendous.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Lots of people want to talk about Pi Day. Our number 844-724-8255. Renata in Columbus, Ohio. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. Happy Pi Day, gentlemen.
Happy Pi. Hey, are you having some pie today?
I will later today, for sure.
Okay. You have a question for us? Yeah.
I do. My question is this. I don't know if you remember, there was a movie that came out in 1998, the black and white film, and it was called Pi. And I loved this movie. And I was wondering if you remember any other instances where pie has appeared in pop culture.
Steve, I remember the movie.
I do. I certainly remember the movie, too. It's a Darren Aronofsky movie. And I must say that it's a ticklish point among some of us in the math world, because it's yet another movie where a mathematician is a crazy maniac.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, come on.
Subject. I suppose Pi also appeared on Square One TV on PBS back in the 80s, too. So that was a much better depiction of mathematicians.
And I'm sure it's been on Sesame Street and all those shows over the years also.
Yes. I think, just to counter this image of us as being lunatics, which is really such a pervasive thing, unfortunately in the movie A Beautiful Mind, the true story more or less of John Nash, it does dwell a lot on his long sufferings, mm-hmm. Episodes of schizophrenia. But if you want a mathematician who looks pretty psychologically healthy and even cool, I would say your best bet is to look at the show Numbers, where the FBI agent had a brother who was, got a nice-looking girlfriend, and he's a good guy, and he solves crimes.
Yeah. All right.
There was certainly Pi in that show.
Yep. So thanks, Renata, for calling, and happy Pi. Happy Pi Day to you. Our number 844 SciTalk. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Stephen Strogatz, author of The Joy of X, A Guided Tour of Math. And, Pi is never ending. Are we sure of that, Steve? I mean, we'll never definitively have the last number of it. I mean, how do we know that? It sounds very mysterious.
We do know that. That's a property of numbers that's not actually very uncommon. That is to say, most numbers that you can think of on the number line, well, maybe I shouldn't say that you can think of, because we're a little bit biased from our education, that we're used to thinking about numbers that terminate, like, say, a half is 0.5, and that's the end of it.
Right.
Or if you want, you could say 0.5000, and then the zeros repeat forever. Okay, so there's numbers like that, or there's numbers like a third, where it's 0.333, and the threes repeat forever. Or you can get more interesting fractions like 1/7, where it goes on for a while, 0.142857, and then that repeats 1/4, 2/8, 5/7, 1/4, 2/8, 5/7. So we know, and it's a matter of about really middle school arithmetic to prove that every number like that, that's a ratio of whole numbers, a rational number, can be shown to either terminate in all zeros eventually or to repeat eventually. And so the real issue is, are there numbers that aren't just fractions? And
right.
This was something that was known 500 years BC. This is something that the Pythagoreans figured out, that there are irrational numbers that are not ratios of whole numbers. And Pi is one of them. In fact, most real numbers that you can think of are irrational. So in that sense, Pi is normal, not unusual.
So how does a computer figure Pi? What, people use an approximation of 22/7, something like that. But mm-hmm. what does a computer do to get a better and more accurate approximation of it?
Well, the two ways of systematically approximating Pi that have been used historically were the one that I mentioned before, where you imagine polygons inside of a
right.
circle and taking more and more sides. Now that, I should say, was done to phenomenal precision in parts of the world that we haven't really talked about yet. So in China, for example, a mathematician named Tu Chengqi in the 5th century calculated pi to about 6 digits using a polygon with something like 12,288 sides by hand. Okay, he's doing this in his head.
Wow.
And that was the best calculation of pi for 1,000 years to come, until the invention of calculus, which led to the second way of calculating pi, which is the way we do it today, where we write down a so-called infinite series for pi, of which the most famous, although not the best, but the first and in some ways most famous, was discovered in India around 1400. By a mathematician named Madhava. And I would like to try to say what it is, although it's not so easy to do math over the radio. But we know that pi is a little bit less than 4, right? It's bigger than 3. It's less than 4. So if I divide pi by 4, I'm going to get a number less than 1. Pi divided by 4 is something less than 1. But what? Well, so Madhava figured out that pi divided by 4 is, okay, get this, 1 minus a third plus a fifth minus a seventh, plus a ninth. And do you hear the pattern?
Yeah.
I'm using the odd numbers.
Yeah.
And I'm alternating plus and minus. Now, that sends a shiver down my spine to think that the number that we think of as associated with circles, pi, has something to do with odd numbers,
right.
Which, what does that have to do with circles?
Steve, I have to break. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk lots more about pi. Stay with us. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. It's Pi Day, March 14th, 3.14. Let's not forget it's also Albert Einstein's birthday, March 14th, as we celebrate Pi Day with Stephen Strogatz. Steve, is pi used for anything out of the ordinary today, or mostly just to calculate things about circles? What do we do with pi?
That's a great thing to be discussing. I'm really glad that you asked that, because there might be a feeling that pi is somehow about circles, but that's it. And that is really far from it. The important thing to recognize is that pi is universal in anything that moves in cycles. It's more general than circles. It's anything that repeats in a cycle or in a wave. So, for instance, right now we're communicating with sound waves. You've got your heart beating rhythmically. You've got brain waves operating. There's ocean waves. There's electromagnetic waves needed to do wireless in your apartment. You know, I mean, anything that involves repetitive processes in time deals with sine waves, the things you learned about in trigonometry. And sine waves are intimately connected to circles and through that to pi. So for me, pi is a symbol of the rhythm of the universe, the rhythms of our own bodies, and it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, let me see if I can get a phone call in here. Let's go to Angela in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hi, Angela. Angela, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, go ahead. You have a question for us.
Yes. Aside from the obvious of bringing home a pie and talking about its shape, do you have any recommendations for how to make pie interesting and relevant for much younger kids, kindergarten age, preschoolers?
Yeah. How do you explain it to somebody very young?
Well, I that's something that happened in our own house, I'd have to say, when I showed my kids a pie plate where that's on. You have a photo of me on your website. I appreciate that, of my daughter Leah just took the picture the other day. And it shows the digits of pi running around on the rim of the plate. And for our kids, at least, this was an eye-opening thing. The idea that the digits just keep going and going, and the kids can't see any pattern in it, and they're, you know, little kids love to look for patterns, and they can't see one. This was their first glimpse of infinity. I think they started to get a feeling about something very profound and mysterious about infinity just from looking at all those numbers running around the rim. So I don't know if that would work for your child, but that's one. Doing this experiment with the toothpicks is fun because kids like to make a mess.
Mm-hmm. Could using string, measuring a circle with string and trying to figure out the ratio that way, the circumference thing?
That's a great idea.
Yeah?
Sure. You could ask questions about your own body or your child's body, you know, try to measure how wide the waist is, let's say, and then put a string around the belt to see. Now, of course, your waist is not a perfect circle, so you won't get a perfect measurement of pi. But then you could ask which parts of your body are the most circular, like is your forearm circular or your head?
Angela, anything there for you?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Are your kids inquisitive about this at all? Do they, you know it's Pi Day? Or?
Yeah, we like to celebrate all kinds of fun, odd holidays. So we're definitely aware of Pi Day, and we like to eat pie, but I'm just trying to think of ways to make it more scientific as we talk about it tonight. So these are great. Good tips. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a good Pi Day.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Steve, what else is there? And we've got about a minute left. Anything else about mathematics? You're such a great explainer and popularizer of mathematics. And because you're right. All of us think that math is about memorizing numbers and stuff.
Thank you. I suppose one thing we could say is some people may be wondering, how far do we know pi? You mentioned that it goes on forever in terms of its digits. We, as of 2011, computers had calculated it out to 10 trillion digits.
10 trillion? How many? Oh, that's a good question. In a minute I have left, how many digits do scientists need to have to be accurate enough to use it in calculation?
Probably something like maybe 10 or 20.
10 or 20 digits.
Yeah, because if you think about what's the most accurate things that we know in the universe, you know, I mean, there are very few measurements you can make to a precision of 10 decimal points.
Right.
So, or 10 decimal places. So it's pi, our knowledge of pi is not the limiting factor in anything in terms of engineering or science. It's just it's sort of like climbing Mount Everest for us. We just want to know more about it.
Yeah, and are there contests for people to see how many digits they can remember? Mm.
Certainly, yes. I didn't happen to know the answer to this, but I looked it up in preparation for the show. The world record, according to Guinness, is someone named Chow Lu memorized and recited over 67,000 digits of pi, and it took him over 24 hours to say them.
Wow. Well, we have on our website, we actually have people in Times Square we interviewed to, and around New York City, seeing how well they knew pi. And I was surprised to see somebody came up with 50 digits. And and you know what's most...
I'm sorry, just if I could jump in. My other daughter, yeah. Jo, told me something I didn't know. She said, may I have a large container of coffee? That's a way to remember pi. May has three, I has one. May I have a large container of coffee? If you count how many letters are in each of those words, you get 3141592 6.
I got a little Easter egg for you at the end here. This is March 14th, 2014. Next year is going to be Super Pi Day. 3.1415.
Ha! Can't wait.
Can't wait. All right. We'll get it out to another decimal place next year. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Ira.
Steve Strogatz is the author of The Joy of X, A Guided Tour of Math, From 1 to Infinity. He is professor of applied mathematics at Cornell University in New York.